This podcast contains strong language and adult themes from the outset. This week, we welcome one of the UK's finest comedians to Finding the Funny. He has travelled the country in his stand-up tour, Irrational, and has another tour in the pipeline, The Cynics Mixtape. He is a regular panellist on A League of Their Own, has his Sky One show, Rob and Romish Verses, and we loved watching him travel the globe with his mum in Asian Provocateur. He's the host of two podcasts, Hip Hop Save My Life and Wolf and Owl, and has recently written another book titled As Good As It Gets. He is also, we should add, a very passionate vegan. Please give it up for the magnificent Romesh Ranganathan.
Yay! Oh, wow. That's so lovely. Thank you so much. What a beautiful intro. Thanks, guys. I didn't want to fuck that up.
I'm going to fuck it up.
You nailed it.
I wrote that intro.
But that means fuck all to me. It's all about who read it.
Thank you, Ron.
It's more about the delivery of it. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, okay. You could have your little prizes. Yes, well done for writing it. Really thirsty fucking jump in there.
That is me.
You have just nailed Ruth in 2 seconds.
Basically, I'm James, Rom. Yeah. I'm James, basically.
Right.
Thirsty jump-ins is my game. Wherever I can find a place to be like, actually, I did that. Me and James are like the exact same person.
Right. Oh, okay, well, that's good to know.
So you know where you stand now.
I am the total opposite, Rom. Okay, just so you know.
Right, okay, good to know. Now, I saw that because you did the intro. You're very casual about it. And then Ruth jumped in, just sort of recognised me. Look at me. You know, I wrote it. Can you stop talking to Anne? Because I feel like it's been taken away from me. You know?
And Rom, do you mind being called Rom?
No, I love it. No, that's what everyone calls
okay,
me.
Okay, so great.
It,
yeah. Rom, firstly, thank you so much for agreeing to come on our very minute podcast.
Well, no, look, I love podcasts, so it's really good to come and do it. So thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
But we do have a question for you that Ange raised something a couple of weeks ago. We have a segment on the show called What Gets On My Shitting Tits. And Ange raised a couple of weeks ago that she gets annoyed when men wear flip-flops.
Right.
So we want to ask you, as a guy, do you think men should wear flip-flops?
Or where are you in the flip-flop field?
I don't own any flip-flops, actually, but I do have slides, you know, like
yes.
the...
That's yes. Right.
So, but I wouldn't ever, ever wear them if I wasn't on holiday.
That is it.
So, listen, there are people who have lovely feet. But I just think that they should be in men. They should be kept away from public consumption unless absolutely necessary. Do you mean?
That is what Ange thinks.
That is just my personal view on it. And even I would go as far as to say that when I do go on holiday, if we're going to the beach a lot, I even take those little water shoes with me to sort of...
Oh, I love those.
Yes, Rob.
It's partly to cover my feet. Mm. It's partly because I'm scared of everything that lives in the ocean.
So now
my wife sort of knows that that's what I'm like. But when we first went on holiday, before we had children and I was still trying to sort of impress her in a way, or sort of, you know, when you're hiding who you really are from the person you're with.
Those early days.
So that's where I was at. Yeah. And we went on a holiday and I didn't have those water shoes and we went in the sea and I was trying to be all casual and sort of, isn't this romantic? And this is something we're going to talk about for years. And then something sort of brushed past my foot. And then that was the end of me being in the sea for the day and the next day. Because it took me that long to sort of get over it. And it was such an unattractive thing. I could see, like, she was being very understanding about it. But I could tell that was one of the, you know, when people are doing their mental kind of pros and cons list.
Yeah.
I could tell that was something that she was going, okay, well, that is an against in terms of me continuing to see this man. So I just thought, let me, having said that, I don't know if she'd have said, let's go in the water, and I'd have gone, hold on a minute, I'm just going to put on my aqua shoes. I don't know if that would have made it better. I don't know if that's better. So, Rob, I'm just very against.
We are, you and I, mate, are totally on the same page with the flip-flop shit. I'm pleased that we...
You know when people say things like, it's just like the shoe taken back to its most basic form? Just fuck off. Do you know what I mean? It is raw shoe. Do you know what I mean? It's just a base plate and something to attach it to your foot. Yeah. And we've moved on from that. Why don't you fucking join us?
Well, I had an interesting message into my Instagram box this week. And it was from
a very surgical way of describing it. You made it sound like a procedure. I had a very interesting message inserted into my Instagram box.
Into my inbox.
All right, guys, fuck off. Fuck off.
Oh, come on, Patty. We're only having a laugh.
Okay, well, look, I had somebody message me on Instagram this week.
Sure.
And it was from a company called Smooth My Balls.
Right.
And they were asking if I wanted to be a product ambassador for this brand, okay?
Right.
So they've got three products.
Yeah.
The hedge clippers, the turf choppers, and the pube muncher.
Right. Pube muncher?
Yes. So I can't actually figure out what the pube muncher is.
Yeah.
I looked at their Instagram. I don't know how you use it. You know, you've got like a razor, you've got a grooming kit. But one of the reviews actually says this. One word. Amazing. My missus loved how clean and tidy I was after using your product. Left my balls smooth as eggs. So, I don't feel like I can be a product ambassador for this crew. Are you up for it? Should I pass your details on?
Absolutely not. No, thank you.
What do you feel about the whole male grooming shit, Rom?
I think that I'm all in favour of generally men taking care, you know, like moisture, you know, men's makeup, moisturising, nice. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm all in favour of that. If, you know, to whatever degree men want to do it, I think that's absolutely fine. You sort of think, well, this is a good thing that they've got a product that is encouraging men to trim their pubes, because men don't think about these sort of things.
Yeah,
you know, sure. When you consider the expectations that men put on women, with regards 100%. To how they should keep their hair, idea that there are many men who expect women to be completely hairless,
but equally
have completely unkept ball bushes is incredible,
ball
right?
Bushes.
Yeah, but my issue with this product, actually, and a lot of men's grooming products, is that they still haven't got over the fact that for some reason, men need it to be called something sort of macho. I find it so embarrassing that it's got to be called fucking testicle smasher or hair fucker or whatever. Do you know what? For men to buy it. It's a thing to trim downstairs. Why does it have to be, declare war on the bush with a fucking pube muncher? Chomp, chomp, chomp. Like, why does it have to be that? I just find it, as a bloke, I find it so embarrassing. It's like, I saw this, and I used it actually, like, because, like, when you're doing TV, you know, I wear makeup on TV. They put, like, anti-shine and all this stuff. So I thought it'd be quite good for me to have some of this stuff, because, you know, with COVID, we haven't been able to have makeup done by makeup artists. So I thought, well, it'd be good for me to have, like, a little set of my stuff. So the men's makeup brand I found is called War Paint. And you just think, it's makeup. I mean, it's a good product, don't get me wrong. It's great stuff, but why does it have to be called War Paint? And it's not the company's fault. It's because men are just so just so tragic. Yeah. It has to be called, you know, smash your face in the fucking eyes with some fucking contour. Fucking kick yourself in the cunt with concealer. Or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be. For some reason, it has to be something like. I find it so depressing. I just think it is makeup. This is a thing to trim your pubes. Yeah. Why does it have to be called
a pube muncher?
Pube muncher. And like, you know, I've seen the like ball whacker. And do you know what I mean? Like scrote, you know, scrote destroyer or whatever. Like, it's just, call it something normal. I just find it so embarrassing on behalf of men.
We asked some of our listeners if they had any questions for you, and we did have one that came in from Zoe. And Zoe just simply asked, can you catch a cricket ball yet?
Well, this is quite embarrassing, because basically Rob Beckett and I did a show about cricket in South Africa. We went out for the England South Africa test. Are either of you into cricket at all?
Yeah, I like cricket. Yeah.
Right. So Rob's not really into it, and I'm quite.
No,
into
I'm
it,
I'm though. Not that into it. Yeah. Right. I'm with Rob. Yeah. Sorry,
No. You need to apologise. I'm not an ambassador for it, but we went and like had like amazing experiences, and we did a bit of commentary and stuff. And one of the things that they wanted to do is they always have a challenge in these shows. So the challenge was to catch a cricket ball that was hit to us by Nasser Hussain. So Nasser Hussain, former England captain, was hitting these balls up in the air. Now I'm going to tell you this now, and I've not said this publicly before. The way that Nasser hit those balls was fucking unacceptable. I don't know when the last time he did it was, but it was all over the shop. It was completely inconsistent. Right, we'd had a bit of practice,
right.
And it was just absolutely no way of knowing where those balls were going to go. And what happened was, and I thank you for your call. What's the name of the person? That asked
Zoe.
The Zoe. Right. So thank you. Thank you for your question, Zoe. In answer to your question, no, I can't catch a cricket ball when it's being hit completely sporadically by Nasser Hussain. That I can't do. In the training sessions, I got to a point where I could sort of catch it.
Right.
But I think that, like, Rob's... Listen, I'm telling you now, I wasn't just saying it for camera. Rob's catch was much easier than anything I got sent by.
Okay. Right.
And I stand by that. Okay. And look, I'm not saying I'm coordinated. Anybody that's watched more than 3 minutes of anything I've done, like League of Their Own or Robin Romish Versus, knows that I'm not even the layman when it comes to these things. I am subhuman when it comes to hand-eye coordination.
That's the same as me. I'm shocking. I'm shit.
But that wasn't a level playing
field.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. We also had another one from Sophie, and she said, where's the best place you've traveled to, and if you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Very good question, Sophie. Thank you very much for the question. It's a difficult one. I would say, in terms of you know, my recollection of because, you know, the a lot of the travel I've done is we're going to countries that British people don't tend to go to. That's kind of the remit of the show, of misadventures.
Yeah.
And so I would say Zimbabwe's up there as one of the best places.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is, obviously, there's all sorts of turmoil going on there. But I'm talking about, in terms of my visit, the people were lovely. The scenery is incredible. The wildlife's unbelievable. The food's great, the culture's great. I really liked it. And I would say very similar about Ethiopia, to be honest with you. Like, both those places were great. I really loved them. And I would say, like, both of those places are countries where you don't have to be, you know, there are certain people who are like, that you'll say to them, oh, would you go there? And they go, yeah, no, it was really great because, like, you were able to, the hotel was absolute shit and I had dysentery. For 4 days, but it's worth it when you think about the experiences you're taking on board. Like, I'm not that type of guy. It needs to be comfortable. So you know, like, so even within that kind of narrow remit of me liking my home comforts and stuff like that, you can still have a great trip to either of those places. So I really love those. In terms of where I'd really like to go, I'm desperate to go to Japan. I've never been before. And everybody I've heard, I've spoken to that's gone there has said it's an amazing experience.
Yeah.
So,
me too.
I really want to go.
Let's go together. Really, why didn't we
I don't think so.
Ron wants to do that. No.
No, let's not confuse half an hour of getting on a podcast with we should be holiday buddies.
Are you joking? I mean, this is what I thought we were gearing up to.
No, but Patty, you know? Let's be honest. I know you're saying this for the podcast, but Aren't you very? It's very difficult to choose a travel buddy. Do you not think?
Listen,
Patty. Based on what I've seen so far, I think you seem delightful. But what I would say is, I've had experiences where, and I'm sort of slightly nervous about talking about this.
Where my wife
has got on with people, and then introduced me to them because I'm not really in the market for new friends. But my wife is very much.
Yeah.
And so we met these people, and then on a couple of occasions, she's invited them away with us.
Yes, right? For sure. I do that.
And I've got to say, it's awful.
It's truly to find
the sweet spot another set of people or another person of when we're together, when we do things separately, who decides what we're going to do. All of those variables are so difficult to get right. It's almost inevitable that there's going to be friction.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? It's so,
I don't think
it's
there'd
so
be friction
tough.
Between us, Rom. I don't think there would be.
I think
we would be brilliant travel buddies.
What are you basing that on?
I'm basing it on the fact that I don't know.
There you go.
I'll be honest with you. In terms of a pitch, not great. That I've got to say to you. Why? Oh
God, I've blown
it's,
it.
It's a really long pause to deliver no answer
to
at all.
Come back with nothing. Yeah,
I hear that.
You've fucked up there, Pat.
You've absolutely fucked it.
Patty
is fucked up.
Yeah.
So we also have on our show, Romish, a thing called dickish behaviour. So we get our listeners to also observe and find any dickish behaviour that they might have seen. And we had what we thought was an excellent one in from Katie. Mm. And Katie says this: adults on kids' toys, particularly grown men on scooters of any variety, motorised scooters, extreme hoverboards, especially the full kit wankers who have knee pads and helmets. I understand it's safety first, but I just think you need to accept the fact you're 50 and probably shouldn't be racing your mates in the park on what is essentially a child's motor. Grow up, Katie, on the gram. Now, I think grow up is an underestimated put down.
I think saying
to someone, "Oh, just grow up." Like, I don't think we use it enough. Grow up.
It's very difficult to come back from as well. Grow up.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've got mixed feelings about this. If I'm being honest with you, and I'll tell you why. So I would have agreed with this completely and 100%. Were it not for the fact that I did a Twitter advert years ago, right? Part of that advert, it was really fucking eggy. It was awful, actually, in hindsight.
It's
one of those things where they said to me, the marketing people go, and you know, we're going to really like capture your comedy. And you know, and I know you've seen some commercials where it's like corny, but we're really going to capture your essence of who you are.
Lord.
And they fucking didn't, right? What they did was they put me on a segue and got me to talk about Twitter is what happened, right? It's one of the worst things I've ever fucking done.
I've just got to quickly interject with this. Patty, this is a few years back. We had the opportunity to have a go on segways, right?
Right.
Now, Patty, she's just not, you know, very, very good with that sort of thing. She's not at all. And this whole thing with her being on this segway was hilarious to the point that you actually nearly ran over the instructor.
I fell off. I mean, they say you can't ever fall off a Segway.
Just to make you feel a bit better, Patty. So all I had to do was ride in it. So the concept of the advert was a Segway that didn't have a handle. It was just you controlled it with your legs, right?
Yes,
it had a little set of handlebars just that came up to your ankles and you could just sort of move and apparently it's actually easier than the regular. It doesn't look like it, but it is actually easier than the regular segment. Right.
Okay.
So all I had to do was go in a straight line and these people join me on this kind of procession, like different American celebrities, and then I tell them about Twitter. That's the idea of the advert. So I'm sure as you guys are sitting there, you're thinking, God, that is the essence of Ramesh's comedy. That is so
that is so
what he's about.
Okay. Yeah,
cool,
totally.
cool. Anyway, so they had to give me three days of training. So like we'd go to these underground car parks around LA, and they'd put like plastic cones down, and I had to slalom through these plastic cones.
Amazing.
With the Segway
Holy
expert
shit.
until they felt like I was at a point where it was safe for me to go in a straight line. With an advert.
Oh my God.
Anyway. The reason I mention all of that sort of tragic story is that I thought it was fun. I actually enjoyed it. I could see myself enjoying this.
Mm.
Having said all of that, I think that you shouldn't be riding something that if you come off it, even at the slowest of speeds, you're writing off a week. I agree that is the problem, isn't it? Because when kids come off things, they sort of look to you for a reaction.
Yeah.
If you don't overreact, they sort of go, it must be all right then.
Yeah.
And then they get up and get straight back on it. If a man of my age falls off a Segway, I've got to cancel work for a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so I just think there is something. And also, the other thing is, I do think men, they kind of do it in lieu of a personality sometimes.
They do, don't they?
They kind of want to look a bit quirky and stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I love riding a scooter, me.
Yeah.
And you go, okay. But that's, that doesn't make me want to talk to you more.
No.
They're basically beige,
aren't they? They're beige. And then they add in, oh, no, but look, guys, I'm into extreme sports. Most Saturdays I'm down at the park with John. Yeah.
With my skateboard.
Doing Segway racing. Like that. And you sort of go, no, mate, you're beige. You're still beige.
I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, have you heard of peacocking? Do you know peacocking?
Yes.
No.
Right.
Peacocking
is where a man will do something that makes him stand out to make him sort of more attractive, like wearing wearing an over the top hat or something.
Yes.
Like that.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Like a fedora.
Yeah. Like
drawing attention.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of this is, because men are, you know, I'm sure you're aware of this, are tragic. We are tragic. And I include myself in that. Just mentally, we are, it's pathetic. And in your head, what a man will think is that if I ride a scooter, a woman will look at me and go, oh, my God, he's still got his childlike attitude to life. And he just doesn't give a shit what people think.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he's such a sexy maverick.
Yes.
Oh, let me just.
Yeah, sexy.
Do you know what I mean? That's what men think. Whereas actually what women think is.
What a twat.
Grow up.
Grow up.
Sad, pathetic man.
Yeah, or maybe even a grow the fuck up. You can pop a fuck in there.
Yeah. Katie's right. We look at that and go, oh, God, Steve, grow up.
Steve. It's so funny how men think things come across. A lot of decisions, a lot of terrible decisions that men make could be solved by just having a conversation with a woman.
Yes.
You know, just saying, can I ask a question? Does this make me look really cool?
Yeah.
Or does this make me look like a fucking weapons grade bell end?
Yeah.
It's all it takes. And a lot of things. That's why I'm so grateful to my wife is so honest. You know, sometimes I'll buy like, I bought some Japanese kind of harem kind of yoga trouser things during lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And I thought they were really cool. Do you know what I mean? But I also knew in my heart of hearts that Lisa would have some sort of objection to them. So what I did was I sort of eased her into the idea. I sort of weaned her onto the idea of seeing me in those trousers, right? So I sort of wore them around the house quite a lot. And so eventually to the point where I felt like she'd got used to that image. It was no longer shocking to her see me in these trousers with the sort of drop crotch.
Nice.
Sort of Aladdin tribute act trousers.
Sort of MC Hammer.
Yeah. Oh, that's, MC Hammer-esque. Yeah, yeah.
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 Anyway, one day we were doing the school run and I left it right to the last minute. The kids were downstairs and I said, I'm just coming. And I walked down the stairs thinking I've got her used enough to this I'm ready to go outside. And she said to me, as I came down the stairs, what the fuck are you doing? And I said, I said, I'm going on the school run. And she said, she said to me, you cannot leave the fucking house in those trousers. She goes, I don't mind seeing, I've just about got to the point where I accept you wearing them around the house. But if you think it's okay to fucking throw the kids' popularity under the bus, throw the image that I've got to the other parents under the bus by you wearing those fucking trousers, you've got another thing coming. And she made me change.
Good. I'm Team Lisa.
What is your... Yeah, is that your wife's name, Lisa?
Lisa.
Oh, my gosh. I love Lisa. I mean, I love you, Rom, but I also very much love Lisa.
She's very to the point,
She's a drama teacher, isn't she, Rom?
She was a drama teacher, yes.
That's why she's like that, because she'll say to kids in drama, what are you doing?
One of the things that the kids said to her, they used to say to her, and I've seen this a lot now, is that they said that the sixth formers used to tell my wife that she had a look. They knew that she'd be really disappointed in something they'd just done, a performance they'd just done, because they described the look on her face as she's just found dog shit in her mouth. That's kind of how she'd look. And that's what the kids used to say. The number of times I've seen the dog shit mouth look from Lisa.
I know
that she's really disappointed.
I think a lot of women do naturally have that look.
Yeah.
You know, that dog shit in my mouth look. Yeah. You are really pissing me off.
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. What are you playing?
I think we can just nail that look very easily.
Yeah, she's very good at it, yeah.
Well, look, we always end with a section that we call Don't Go There, which is where we try and tackle more kind of serious subjects. And we wondered, Ange and I wondered this week, we just had a question for you about what it was like growing up English with Sri Lankan parents and heritage while attending a private school in Crawley. That's quite a mix of things. And what was that like for you as a kid growing up?
Well, I kind of saw it from both sides, because I went to private school for a little bit, and then my parents fell on hard times, and then I ended up getting taken out. They couldn't afford to send me there anymore, and so I ended up at a comprehensive school. And so I saw the difference in those two schools, to be honest with you, because when I went to private school, I was one of only a few Asian kids at the school. I remember, like, in my year group, there's maybe like me and like two other Asian kids or something in the whole year group. And I remember, my recollection of being there is twofold, actually, is one that I did get called like racial slurs a fair bit. And that sort of, that can happen. And you know, I don't think back then you could expect a kid. You know, the truth is, I expect even now, and my eldest son has, I expect my children to experience some sort of racism at school from kids. I just think it's inevitable, right? So you sort of go, okay, it's going to happen. And so it did happen to me, you know, kids calling me like Packy and stuff like that. And then, but my thing that I found, and I haven't really talked about this, which is why I'm kind of sort of slightly, but my enduring memory of it is not feeling like the school had dealt with it very seriously. You know, I remember having things said to me and me talking to my teachers about it and them not really. I just think I felt like it had more gravitas than me being called something, just anything. But the way the teachers dealt with it is if I'd said to them, oh, he called me a twat, or he called me a dickhead. Yeah. You know, like, I felt in my mind, I think there must be an escalation of this, right? You know, because this is, even as a kid, I remember, like, even at 11, thinking, this is a big deal that I've been called this.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't get that response. So then what happened is, to be honest with you, I started, like feeling like I had to defend myself. And I used to get, I'd get like kids call me something, it would trigger me. I never hit anybody, but I would grab, you know, I remember grabbing somebody by the collars and just going, don't say that to me.
Yeah.
And then I'd get detention for that because the teacher's walking into that and seeing they look like, I get it. As a former teacher, I understand why that happens because they saw me as the aggressor in that situation.
Mm, yeah.
But I remember like just feeling like it wasn't being dealt with properly. When I went to comprehensive school, when I went to a state school, I still did get a bit of racism. But the difference was, is there were loads more Asian kids there. Mm. And it felt like it was a much more extreme thing to be. Like those people that were being racist. You know, I remember there's one kid in particular who one day I was walking out of school and he spat at me and said something racist. Oh. And but he was like... he was like a social outcast for it. You know, like mm-hmm. he, like people just saw him as like a nuclear level twat. Yeah. He was rock hard. You know, when you have those kids that are rock hard as well.
Yeah.
But like,
oh, yeah.
I remember like there were enough sort of Asian kids there. And also not just Asian kids, but white kids who saw that as disgusting, who sort of helped me out. And, you know, there was a support network there and stuff. So I felt I felt a lot more backed up by it. You know, I felt a lot more supported in that. But it's like a very difficult thing to process as a kid, where you go, there are people that hate me or don't like what I am or think I'm a lesser person for something that I can't even control. I don't know what to do about this. And I don't, there's nothing I can do to make you stop seeing me.
Yeah.
As this, right? And so it's a very difficult thing to kind of process. Mm. Now, to be honest with you, I look back at it and I think they were just trying to think of the most hurtful thing they could possibly say. And the truth is that, you know, so one of my kids now got a racial, you know, somebody said something racist to him at school. And immediately I don't think about the kid. I think their parents must be racist. You know, you're not born with that.
Absolutely.
You know, I see how my kids talk about, you know, they go to a school that's got a lot of diversity. Mm. My kids don't see it. They don't, you know, see differences like that. So if a kid of their age is saying that to them, they've got it from somewhere. So immediately I think, you know, that's come from the parents. But, you know, it's a tricky one. It's very difficult. I went through a phase, you know, when I was a teenager, I went through a phase of being very, very angry about it. Because, you know, and I'd react badly if anybody said anything to me. And your instinct is... And I've had a number of incidents, but thankfully they're fairly few and far between. You know, one night outside a nightclub, I got attacked by some skinheads, and like, you know, they targeted me and a couple of friends because we were Asian, and you know, and I got into a fight when a guy it was purely racially motivated. But those things, I'm telling you this, those things stick out in my memory because they've happened, and it's unacceptable that they happened.
Yeah.
But it hasn't happened to me loads. I think what happens much more is kind of sort of slightly more subtle levels of racism, there's a way that somebody says something to you, there's a way that somebody looks at you, there's loads of different types of racial discrimination. Where you know, I was talking to you before we started recording about the idea that that we're hardwired to gravitate towards people who look like us. If you were interviewing people for a job, are more likely, if all other things being equal, you're more likely to give that job to somebody that shares the same characteristics as you.
Yeah,
therefore, if most positions of power are held by, let's just say, white men for the sake of simplicity, that means that white men are more likely to be employed in those positions. You know what I mean, all other things being equal. So, you know, there's all those other things that you're sort of aware of. I remember one of the incidents I had that I had to sort of counteract in my head was, I was supporting Sean Walsh on tour years ago, and we did the gig, and it was in Barnstable, right? It was in Barnstable. So We did the gig. We had a nice time at the gig, and then afterwards we didn't have to do anything to the show the next night. So we thought, let's go out and have a few drinks with the promoter, and we went to the pub, and I was, it didn't occur to me that time, but I was the only person of color in the whole place, right? Because You just don't get that many ethnic minorities that way.
Yeah. No.
Around that way. But I didn't think anything of it. I'm used to that. You know, I don't even, I wouldn't, it's only afterwards that it occurred to me. But
yeah.
So anyway, I'm in the pub and I come out and I wanted a cigarette. And I had a cigarette and I didn't have a light. So I went up to a guy and I said, could I borrow a light, please? And he said, yeah. And he gave me the light. And as I lit the cigarette, he said, are you going to say thank you? He said it with an edge. Are you going to say thank you for the light? And I said to him, and I lit the cigarette and I said to him, oh, I said, I was going to thank you once I'd lit it, but thank you. And then his mate goes, never mind, thank you. You need to apologise for even being in this country, right? And then his mate, and then I realised that this guy wasn't a nice, like this guy had been, he didn't want to give me a lie. I'd walked up to him, you know, and he was a racist. His mate was a racist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I sort of thought, I looked around and I thought, well, I can't really challenge this because I don't know anybody here. I'm just going to end up with getting the shit kicked out of me. So I just sort of walked away. But what I then had with in my head was I looked around across the pub and I thought, that's how everybody here sees me. I suddenly became aware, or falsely aware, or aware, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just suddenly thought, that's how everybody, they don't see me as a person like everyone. Like everybody here thinks that about me. And then I can't, then you can't enjoy your night then.
No.
You know? I know it's not about enjoying your night, but just every white person I see there and I think, oh, you think I'm a
fucking...
Yeah, you think like that. And I've since lost that because the truth is now, because of being a person with profile, you know, social media, I think I probably get something racist sent to me every other day, probably. Do you know what I mean? I will always get, they're not always overt. It will be something like, oh, no prizes for guessing why Ramesh Ranganathan was booked to do that show.
Yeah.
Or, do you know what I mean? Or something like, you know, it's like those kind of, those kind of things where you know what they're getting at, or you know, or it can be stuff like, you know, literally last week I got somebody going, I'm sick of you complaining about the politics in this country. Why don't you fuck off back to India? Or so, you know, you'll get that. Like, but the difference is now it doesn't even anger me now. I just sort of think, you know, whenever you look at their profile, it's like proud patriot. They've got like hundreds of Union Jacks or St. George's crosses in their profile, and I just think, do you know what? I can't give this the energy of being angry about this. Do
you know what I mean?
So,
you know?
just quickly on the. I mean, obviously, we've seen the conversation and the narrative around racism explode in the last year as a result of the murder of George Floyd, and I think this is a conversation that has started, and for me, I think it's really important that we don't let that conversation die out. And I'm really aware that these things can come in peaks and troughs, can't they? We get a high profile something, and everybody's like, "I've got to do some learning. I've got to read all the books."
Yeah.
You know, and then it dies down again, and before you know it, we're like 10, 15 years, and then another high profile. How do we keep this conversation going? Because I don't think it should always be down to people of color to educate us. I think white people have to take responsibility for educating themselves.
Yeah.
And white people have to take responsibility for carrying on the conversation. And how do we do that? How do we become, you know, people that don't let this stop?
I think it's really difficult, is the honest answer. I mean, I think, like, you know, when the BLM stuff happened, and everybody was on Instagram talking about it and doing the black squares and stuff, I've got to be honest with you, part of my instinct was oh, here we go, this would be something that everybody's gonna pretend they give shit about this for 2 weeks, and you know, it makes you look good on Instagram where you say I care about this, and then you stop giving a shit, you know. And so it made me actually even more reluctant to get involved in it in the first instance.
I
just think this is fucking this is really trivial. The truth is that I think it comes from, and this is not easily sorted out, I just think it comes from ongoing conversations, and I think it comes from not feeling like you've got to tread on eggshells. It's like me saying to you, you can ask me whatever you want, and I will not judge you for whatever you ask me. And we've got to have awkward conversations. And and I think, listen, I think there's a bit of onus on us to, like, you know, I don't know if you've read Renée Edo Lodge's book, Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. But, like, I read that book. But as an Asian man, I got that from that because I'm not black, and so there are certain elements of the black British experience that I hadn't realised, that I hadn't empathised with, and so I think it's that thing of like, you know, finding out as much as you can yourself. But I think there's lots of conversations to be had, and there's lots of, we've got to have awkward conversations. Like, for example, that there is substantial amounts of racism towards the black community from the Asian community.
You know, that
does exist, right?
Yeah.
And people feel awkward about talking about that because, you know, you're talking about, you know, the racism we're comfortable talking about is white on everyone else. That's the racism that we're all happy to talk about, as if discrimination doesn't go on between other minority groups, right? And it's just simply not the case. And so I think it's that thing of like, we should all be willing to discuss this, and it comes from like understanding the nuances of it, and you know, like the truth is that not everybody that says something racist is a racist. Do you know what I mean? It might be that they're just ignorant, and so you know, or they might be ignorant of that issue, or they don't know why that's offensive. Like, I'll give you an example. Like when I did the Albania travel show, the co-host, we went to this, we went up this mountain, and it was all snowy. And she said to me, God, you really stand out in this snow landscape right now. Now that, if a British person said that to me, I'd be like, what the fuck, man? I think she called me, I shouldn't be laughing because it's fucking racist, but I think she called me like a brown snow leopard or some shit like that. Right now, now genuinely, honestly, she thought she was being complimentary. She thought it was like a cool thing to say.
Yeah.
Because there are no fucking brown people in Albania. Right? So she's got the conversations around race are are not nuanced. They're not, there's no fucking understanding of the of the. So, you know, I had a chat with her about it and just said, just so you know, like, if you said that in Britain, you'd probably get fucking cancelled. Do you know what I mean? And And I didn't get angry with her. I didn't feel any anger towards her for that because she's not a racist.
No.
Do you know what I mean? She's coming at it from, it was a really fucking mad thing to say. And like it might have been insensitive and it might have been mental, but I don't think she's a racist.
But it was, so it was actually quite innocent.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Equally, But the thing is, racism isn't always that apparent, and I think it's, you know, I think that we should be able to have these conversations. But I also think I've had conversations with white people about racism where they just say to me, "How the fuck is that racist?" And I try and they're sort of like, "How, explain to me how this is racist?" And I go, "Well, it's not all on me to explain this to you, first of all, but second of all, even after I explain it, you sometimes get the reaction, well, you know, what can you, you know, what can you do nowadays, right? And and the truth is that if somebody says to you that this thing is offensive, or this thing makes me feel like this, or this thing is discriminatory because whatever, you might not agree with them on what the solution to that is, but you cannot deny that there is a problem there.
Absolutely.
You know, you might not agree that, okay, we need to make sure that there's 70% people of color on all television shows. You know, you might not agree with that, but there's something, there is a bump there, and we need to work together to address that. And, you know, it's like, you know, I remember reading about a Chelsea fan got banned from Stamford Bridge for life for racially abusing a black player. And I thought to myself, well, okay, he's been banned for life. Now, in my head, I think there's a load of people now that go to Chelsea that think the same thing, but just know not to say it out loud.
Absolutely.
Right. So have we actually tackled racism there?
No.
No. We've tackled open racism.
Yeah.
We've tackled declaring racism. Yeah. I don't know if I want these arseholes to go undercover.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like how is that solving the problem? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's that thing of like, if you say, you know, I just think it has to be, we have to try and engender an atmosphere where these sort of conversations are normal.
Happen.
These sort of conversations are normalised. And if you say something to me, if you ask me a question now, I'm not going to suddenly go, fucking hell, Andrew's a bit racist. It has to be, or vice versa. If I say something, you don't go, fucking hell, Rom's is a bit sensitive. It's like we've got to appreciate where everybody else is coming from and try and help that. Because if somebody calls me a racist, if somebody says something racist to me and I go, fuck you, you racist piece of shit,
yeah,
that feels good in the moment and it's a visceral reaction.
Yeah.
But I'm not solving the problem. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying put your arm around a racist, but I'm just saying like, you know, I just think opening up these things, people get nervous about talking about it. And people who have had no experiences with people of colour suddenly being accused of being racist, I can understand why they're confused by that. And so it's just that thing of, the truth is, it's a very complicated situation to deal with. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and start to work at it, you know? And so I don't think it's as simple as like making it unacceptable to say these things publicly. You've got to there's a bit more deep than that, you know?
Rom, I just know this is going to be just such an amazing episode.
I hope so.
Can't thank you enough. Honestly. We know how busy you are. You have such a profile, rightly so. You're exceptionally
wonderful.
Thanks, guys.
We are so grateful that you were able to give up your time to come and chat to us. We honestly can't thank you enough. And look, you know, we are available to come on Wolf and Owl if that, you know,
the thing is about Wolf and Owl, guys, is we don't have, I'd love to do that, but we don't have guests on.
Fine.
But if we needed like a, I'm not going to attribute animals to you now. That would be hugely insulting. But if we needed...
attribute them, it's fine. Let's tribute them. We're happy with that. We're happy. You know, that's fine. We'll just make a show where we go to Japan, Rom. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. We can bypass Wolf and Owl. You and I can just make a show where we travel to Japan.
Fine,
that's fine.
So does that mean I don't feature?
No, you don't feature. We'll just write stuff for you for when we're back.
You can do the voiceover.
And we'll write it.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah. Okay, I'm okay with that.
Well, what an episode.
Oh, I mean, I just bloody love Romesh.
Yeah.
I love him.
He's amazing.
I already loved him. I've loved him from the day I met him, which was quite a few years ago. Just met him on the one time and knew I loved him then. And it's just continued and grown.
Where are you going with this?
Like, just that I love Rom. I love Romesh.
We love Rom.
We love
Rom. It was absolutely brilliant. I think the racism stuff was also, it was great to be able to have a bit more of a serious chat with him about that. So obviously, if there's anything that you want to get in touch with us about that's been in this episode, we love hearing from you. If there's stuff you want to catch up with us about, messages you want to send us, anything that you think that's been talked about that you agree or disagree with, we're here for all the spectrums.
Spectrums.
So there's loads of ways you can get in touch with us. You can find us both on Instagram. I'm at Ruth Corden.
And I'm at Ange Corden. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search Finding the Funny Podcast. Or you can send us an email. hello@ruthcorden.com.
But we'll be back, same place, same time, as always, next week, helping you to find more of the funny.